Good morning, everybody. Poskim Bechodach Sanya, I just wanted to thank Muradasa, Rabbi Taubis, and Rav Shaya, and Davida, who just met, for all of their good offices in terms of, you know, organizing this opportunity to get together. When I signed up for this, I didn't realize that I would have some family present, and both, you know, Mishpachas Av, for these purposes, Kriya Mishpacha, Mishpachas Aim, Kriya Mishpacha, my father's son, my cousin Moshe, is here. So Moshe's father and my grandfather were the closest of brothers, and so it's always special to be together with Moshe, my cousin Shani, who's, grandmother and my grandmother, Yibadel Ben Achayim Ben Achayim, we just had my grandmother's Hamas Matseva last week, were the closest of sisters. So it's very special for me to be with everybody, and maybe a little extra special to be together with family. What I want to try to do this morning is to take advantage of an opportunity that we have, as we just read Shlach yesterday, to reflect a little bit more broadly on the persona of Yoshua ben Nun. On the one hand, Yoshua is obviously familiar to all of us. His achievements and accomplishments are well known. And yet, I still think that it's possible and fair to say, and you'll see that I'm not just, using this term in a cavalier way, that to say that Yoshua is really an underrated figure. And I have in mind two Gemaras, the Gemara Masechta Shabbos and Daf Kuf Hei, followed by the Gemara Masechta Bava Basra Daf Ayin Hei. And again, I'll be referencing these sources. We're not going to see everything inside. I'll try to make sure that it's accessible to all, such a wonderful, diverse crowd that we have here. The Gemara in Shabbos notes that Yoshua ben Nun was not nispad kehalacha, that he wasn't eulogized, he wasn't appreciated properly by the Jewish people. And the Gemara has unusually harsh terms for the gravity of that particular avera. This is a Gemara that puts true trepidation into every rav and to anybody who's going to deliver a hesped, the importance of capturing a person. And it's very fascinating that of all people, that Yehoshua is the paradigmatic example within halachic literature of somebody who wasn't fully appreciated. And that observation is actually compounded by an observation of the Gemara in Bava Basra, that the Zakenim Sheba'oso Hador, that not just the populace writ large, sometimes the Hamonam can't be expected to appreciate, but even the aristocracy, as it were, the Zakenim, also didn't have a full appreciation of Yoshua. And here it's very significant. And they lamented that if Moshe was as the sun, Yehoshua was like the moon. And so to some extent, Yehoshua's greatness was occluded by the perception of him strictly in relational terms to his great and obviously unparalleled Rebbe, Moshe Rabbeinu. And so at two levels, I think what the Gemara is telling us is that it's easy for different reasons to overlook Yoshua ben Nun, but we'll be wise not to do so. So I have to give credit where credit is due. About 12 years ago, in this neighborhood, but on the other side of the heights, as they like to say, so my long-term and very dear friend, we're still friends to this day, life has taken him to Chicago and meet a teenek, but Rabbi Noach Goldstein, is the Rosh Kollel out in Chicago these days. So we were learning together, and as these things go, I can't remember exactly what. But he said to me, it seems to me that Yoshua ben Nun is the most successful Jewish leader of all time. He went on to instantiate his claim in terms of what the basic goals, which we'll talk about, of what Yoshua was expected to do, and in terms of delivering on that basic mission statement, that Yehoshua was most successful. So even over a decade later, I don't know if I'm ready to sign on to Rabbi Goldstein's statement. It's a big statement, the most successful Jewish leader of all time. I know he's more successful than I am, but the most successful of all time, that's a superlative. So, but I really started and have continued to think about this for the last 12 years. And this year is kind of the product of Rabbi Goldstein's comment. So I'd like to credit him for at least getting me thinking in the right direction. So what Rabbi Goldstein had in mind was the following, that if you think about the beginning of Sefer Yoshua, what is Yoshua asked to do? He's basically asked to do two things. He's asked to get the Jewish people into the land of Israel, to conquer the land of Israel, we call kibush. And then chiluk, to distribute the land. Now that has a lot of halachic significance, because the Kedusha Rishona, which we'll talk a little bit about, the first instantiation of the land of Israel with sanctity that unfortunately did not last. There are two opinions in the Gemara, but we rule according to the view that Kedusha Rishona, Kitchela Shaitavlo, Kitchela Silavo. So that went online, as it were, after 14 years. And Yeshua really succeeded in that mission. Yeshua succeeded in conquering the vast majority of the land of Israel. Not everything, but okay, well, for these purposes, we'll say Rubo Kikulo. And then second of all, he was able to get the tribes where they were supposed to go. And he did so within the framework of keeping the Jewish people adherent to Torah and Mitzvah. So for that, I would like, with your permission, just to show you these psukim inside. Vayi achar mos Moshe, this is the third source. Eved Hashem, vayomer Hashem al Yehoshua ben Nun, bishareis Moshe leimor. Very fascinating definition that we'll return to. Yehoshua is the bishareis Moshe. Chazak ve'ematz, that's already from the end of Sefer Dvarim. We always have that terminology with Yehoshua. Chazak is sort of physical strength. Ematz is, you know, spiritual strength, as it were. Inner resolve. Ki atat hanchil asam hazeh esaretz asher nishbati labosam laseis lahem. That you will be responsible for conquest and settling of the land. It took 14 years. It wasn't an overnight kind of a thing. Rak chazak ve'ematz me'od. And then this language, but with the additional emphasis of Ma'od, Lishmor Lasos, Kechol HaTorah Sher Sivcha Moshe Avdi, Al Tasser Imenu Yaminu Smol, Leman Taskil, Bechol Asher Teleich. So Chazak V'Ematz Ma'od, within the context of fealty and fidelity to Torah Mitzvos. The Dvar Avram, the Kavne Rav, observed that there's a difference between Yoshua's dual mandate. One of them requires a lot of strength, in other words, the, if you will, the physical component of his leadership to get the Jewish people into Israel, to conquer the land, to settle it, to get each tribe into its proper nachala. That's Chazak V'Ematz. But the spiritual mandate, Lishmor Lasos Kechol HaTorah, that's Chazak V'Ematz Ma'od. That required, said the Kavne Rav, even greater application of strength. So in the end, we'll see that Yehoshua, you know, was very successful in this regard. I would add even more. But let's begin where, you know, we left off yesterday in terms of a bit of a comparative between Yehoshua and Kalev. All the Mefarshim note that Kalev is much more bolate. He stands out very dramatically in the story of the Meraglim. He's the first to counter their claims. Vayahas Kalev es ha'am el Moshe. Hashem seems to recognize this. There are different explanations as to why Yehoshua's name is omitted, but if you look at the fourth source, especially the bolded part towards the end, Vabdi Kalev, Ekev Haisa Ruach Acheres Imo, Vayimalei Acharai, Vavi Osiv El Aretz Asher Bashama, Vizaro Yorishena. That Hashem singles out Kalev for praise. He says everybody's going to be destroyed with the exception of Kalev. Now later on, it's interesting, both Yehoshua and Kalev are mentioned. The Ramban speculates that maybe Yehoshua is left out the first time because Yehoshua's stature is going to be even greater. He's going to take over for Moshe Rabbeinu. But according to the simple pshat, what's really fascinating is that, you know, Kalev seems to be, you know, an even, you know, more impressive figure than Yehoshua. This is actually captured by the Gemara in Sotan, Daf Lamed Hey, where, you know, the Gemara notes that it was Kalev and not Yehoshua who was able to counter the Meraglim. Vayas Kalev Esa'am al Moshe. But that Yehoshua had tried, and he had tried unsuccessfully. Pasach Yehoshua de Kamishtai Amrilei Din Rosh Ketia Yimalal. So the Jewish people said, oh, the Rosh Ketia, he's speaking. So there's this big question as to what Rosh Ketia means. Rashi and most of the Rishonim assume that this has something to do with the fact that Yehoshua himself did not have children. And therefore, you know, his perspective on Israel was somehow jaded by the fact that he wasn't so worried about what might happen to his kids. If you're a good Jewish parent and you're, you know, taking your kids to a place where there are giants and not friendly giants, you know, maybe you'd have a different perspective. So the Torah Tumimah doesn't like this. He doesn't like this because the Gemara in Megillah tells us that Yehoshua had daughters, and, to, you know, one would worry about their daughters as well as their sons. One would hope, you know, a good father. And so the Torah Tumimah actually has a fascinating suggestion that this Rosh Ketiyah is a reference to the fact that Eldad and Medad, and not last week's parsha, but the parsha before that, had been misnabe b'machane, according to one view in the Gemara, that Yehoshua was destined to take over for Moshe. And so Yehoshua was kind of persona non grata. that people looked at him as, you know, kind of, you know, an upstart. And therefore, you know, a Kalev was a much more effective messenger, which is like a really fascinating way to think about, you know, Baruch HaLevi Epstein saying that Yehoshua didn't necessarily start out with the goodwill of the people. People already held it against him before he took over for Moshe, that he took over for Moshe. Usually they wait until the new rabbi has taken over to hold it against him. This was like, you know, an anticipatory, you know, critique. A very fascinating observation. I'll just note, Rabbi Tendler Zatzal, you know, passed away very recently. You know, so Rabbi Tendler, there's, you know, sometimes there's a milsa of the bichusa that actually advances learning. It's a matter of humor that I actually think about within this context. Rabbi Tendler, I remember when I was learning in yeshiva, so he would often, I heard this more than once from him, so he often would say, people would ask him, like, what were the chances that you could marry the daughter of the Gadol Ador, the daughter of Moshe Feinstein? You know, people were saying that, thinking that it would be, you know, mathematically impossible to quantify. And he would say, always in response, 20%. And the reason that he came up with that, and this is, you know, Rabbi Tendler, if you knew him, this is, you know, really Kedarko Bakodesh. So he'd say, look, you know, Rav Moshe is Rav Moshe, and he was always the Posek Hador, but in terms of the yeshiva was very small, you know, MTJ, and there were maybe 20 people in the room, 5 of whom were there to learn, 15 of whom were there to either ask Rav Moshe Shaila after this year or to collect tzedakah. So there were 5 guys of marriageable age, and so, you know, 20%. And then he would think about it, he'd say, well, actually 40%, because Rav Moshe had 2 daughters. So the you know, say, what are the chances that, you know, Yehoshua would take over as the leader of Klal Yisrael? So in a certain sense, the answer is, well, it's to his enormous credit. There are millions of people. In another sense, you might say, well, it's like 50%, right? Because Zulasi, you know, Kalev ben Yefuneh. And the question really becomes, what recommends Yehoshua over Kalev, especially in light of the fact that the early returns are that Kalev seems to have, you know, greater stature, and, you know, that's it, that's acknowledged. So what was it about, you know, Yehoshua? So about 25 years ago, just piecing together a little bit of my, you know, personal history there, my Rebbe, Rav Yitzchak Avraham Tversky, told me, again, kind of a passing comment, you know, something that I've been thinking about over the last quarter century, which was, you know, then put it together with Rabbi Goldstein's comments, and that's how I ended up here. He said, you know, it's really interesting, when it comes to Kalev, the Torah says, Ruach Acheres Imo, that he was of a different mentality. But Yehoshua is described as an Ish Asher Ruach Bo, which became the title of this year, and it's kind of the point that I want to develop. So, when Moshe, we're going to have this a few weeks from now, in Parshas Pinchas, davens for his successor, he appeals to God in a very unusual way. He appeals to Hashem with the term Elokei Haruchos L'chol Basar, you know, God of the Spirit. So what exactly does that mean? And Hashem responds that Yehoshua is going to be the leader. And Yehoshua, this seems to be, you know, like an inescapable conclusion that one has to draw. The Elokei Haruchos says, choose Yehoshua, Ish Asher Ruach Bo. Not Ruach Acheres, but Ish Asher Ruach Bo. So the Medrash Rabbah, you have it here again for those who are interested in seeing inside, in the 8th source, you know, makes the observation that what that refers to is a certain indelible facet of Yehoshua's persona, that his strength was in being able to quote, Leilech keneged rucho shel kol achas v'achas, which means that he could sort of meet everybody where they were. So for the people, let's say, you know, who were really into learning, so he could talk in learning with them. For the people who were interested in chesed, he could talk about that with them. The people that were interested, you know, in other things. So he would always just meet people where they were. And he had this great ability to move people, specifically because Ba'asher Hemsham, he was able to, you know, kind of make that point of contact. Which is just a really interesting way of thinking about a distinction between Yehoshua and Kalev, right? Kalev is Ekev Haisa Ruach Acheres Imo, right? The strength of Kalev is to be able to stand up, which was obviously a critical thing, you know, when you're facing the Chet HaMeraglim, you want to be able to distinguish yourself. But if you're going to have to lead the people and not just oppose, you know, a rebellious movement, so maybe we're looking for a bit of a more conciliatory figure. Ish Asher Ruach Bo. Now, this, I think, leads us to an even deeper place, because this not only serves as, a point of contrast between Caleb and Yehoshua, but even between Yehoshua and Moshe. Now, there's a famous description in the Gemara in Sanhedrin of a contrast, in this case, between Moshe and Aaron, but we'll just focus on Moshe for now. The Moshe, according to Chazal, was characterized by a particular expression called Yikov Hadin Esahar, which roughly translates to, whatever the din is, let that uproot the mountain. In other words, let the chips fall where they may. And of course, the Gemara says that Aaron was a very different kind of a personality. He was an Oev Shalom, Berodev Shalom, and the sugya there in Sanhedrin is trying to figure out what we like better, din, right, hardcore, just going for, you know, what the proper thing is, or pshara, or some kind of mediation. It actually comes out that we basically paskin that pshara is superior to din. We're always looking to mediate. The Rambam says that a bezdin that does pshara tamid hareza mishubach, which is really interesting. So Yehoshua, you know, in that dichotomy, if you will, is much closer to Aharon than he is to Moshe, which is a little surprising, because obviously we think about Yehoshua, you know, as a reflection of Moshe. The Mishnah Avos tells us, Moshe kibel Torah misinai u'misara liYehoshua. The Perish HaMiyuchas, the Rashi, we don't know exactly whether Rashi authored the commentary that's attributed to him in Pirkei Avos, the Chida. We felt very strongly that he did. Others felt strongly that he did not. So we call it the Perish, which is Miyuchas, the Rashi, asks the obvious question, what does it mean that Moshe was Misara liYehoshua? Moshe taught the Torah to all of Klal Yisrael. The Pasuk says, Vayichtov Moshe satara azos, Vayilamda es b'nei Yisrael. He taught the whole Jewish people. So the Perish Miyuchas, the Rashi, says there's a difference between being Malamed and being Moser. One could, you know, have thousands of people that one taught Torah to, you know, that maybe attended a shiur once in their life or whatever it is, but in terms of being Moser Torah to somebody, that's a reflection of being a lifelong Talmud, of being somebody who we would describe as a Talmud Mofak, of really commits themselves in the way that Yehoshua singularly did. The Pasuk in Kisisa tells us, "Umishar so Yehoshua ben Na'ar lo yamish mitocha oel," that Yehoshua ben Nun was like, you know, an unmovable object in terms of being in the presence of Moshe Rabbeinu. And so what's really fascinating to consider is the way that Yehoshua's obvious candidacy, his candidacy is obviously recommended by his singular relationship with Moshe, but at the same time, he seems to distinguish himself from Moshe in terms of his, let's call it, leadership style, yachol leilich keneged rucho shel kol achas v'achas, as opposed to the idea of Yikov Hadin Esahar. So what I'd like to try to do just in the next part of this year is to develop the notion that Yehoshua represents a very important stage in the development of the Masorah. If you think about this mission, Pirkei Avos, that I started with, so Moshe kibel Torah miSinai, Moshe did not have a human Rebbe. He had a divine Rebbe. And so that's really important. Obviously, you know, that started the chain, as it were, of passing down Torah from one generation to the next. But in terms of the way that we receive Torah, Yehoshua seems like an almost more relevant model, right? He's the first human Talmud with a human Rebbe. We're not comparing ourselves to Yehoshua ben Nun, but just structurally speaking. And already by the next stage in the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, right, Yehoshua lizakenim. It wasn't this one-to-one transfer. It was already one to the many. So there's already an asymmetry there. So Yehoshua is kind of sui generis, right? He represents this unique phase in the Masorah where it was this one-to-one transfer, human-to-human transfer. And I think it's very fascinating to think about Yehoshua from that standpoint. The first human being to be the recipient of the Masorah, which means he had to be, obviously, as we said, lo yamish mitocha oel, he had to be exceptionally devoted. But at the same time, we already can appreciate, yachol leilich keneged rucho shel kol achas v'achas, that his development was obviously very much due to his relationship with Moshe, but he eventually became his own man and his own leader with his own style. And I think that becomes a kind of a paradigm for every generation, that we're always supposed to imbibe in a very deep way from our mentors, our Rebbeim, but also, you know, a person has to develop, you know, into who they're meant to be. Now, with respect to this transfer, there's a very fascinating diok, I think, to be extracted from the Rambam. This is in the 10th source. So, with your permission, I'll just take a look inside. The Rambam here is discussing the concept of smicha, the concept of transmission of Masora from one generation to the next. So the Rambam says the following: Echad Besin Hagadol is the tenth source. Ve'echad Sanhedrin Kitana. So the different levels of courts. Yeah, like the most basic court, which is entrusted with resolving financial matters, Dine Mamonos, that's a court of three. Then you have these intermediate courts that can handle even capital cases. They have 23, but they don't handle national matters. The national court is in Yerushalayim. They would sit in the Beis HaMikdash and discuss Agazis. We call them the Sanhedrin, and they had 71. Okay, so that's a little bit about the background here. So that's called the Beis HaGadol, the Echad Sanhedrin Ketana. That's a court of 23. O Beis Din Shel Shlosha, or even the lowest level court, which is only, again, empowered to resolve financial disputes. Tzarech shia echad mehen samuch, mi pia samuch. So what's required is at least one has to be a samuch, has to literally have smicha, which we can't get into all the details now, but basically means a direct transmission all the way from Moshe Rabbeinu. It has to be what we call ish mi pi ish. Just for those who are interested, that line has obviously been broken. The smicha that we have today is kind of, very much a rabbinic iteration of this idea. It's what we call netilas rishus, the Gemara in Sanhedrin daf hey, where it's basically a permission structure to give halachic rulings within a certain framework, but it's not the formal smicha that once existed. Actually, in the 16th century, it's a very fascinating issue. Rav Yosef Karo tried to restore smicha, which was very controversial, based on the position of the Rambam, that if you could just get everybody to agree who the Gadol Hador was, which shouldn't be too difficult, then, and in Eretz Yisrael, right, you don't even have to worry about Chutzlaretz, you don't have to worry about the Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah and Chutzlaretz, you can just restrict it to Israel. If you could just get everybody to agree, then you could restore smicha. Okay. But it's only been 500 years. I don't want to, it's just one second. It's just to get to the point here. So you'll see that the Rambam does something very fascinating. Moshe Rabbeinu samach Yoshua biyad, shenemar v'yismochas yadav alav yitzaveyu. V'chein ha-shivim zekenim, Moshe Rabbeinu samcham, v'shar saleim shechina. V'osam zekenim samchu la'acherim, acherim la'acherim, nimtzu ha-smuchin ish mi piyish ad bez dino shal Yoshua, ad bez dino shal Moshe Rabbeinu. Doesn't have to be in the Sanhedrin, just have to have smicha to confer smicha on the next generation. They don't actually lay their hands on the man. Right? They call him Rabbi. And you'll be able to adjudicate even what's called knasos, which aren't normal financial cases, but cases that involve a certain kind of penalty. So what do you see here from the Rambam? That the smicha of Yoshua was qualitatively distinct. It wasn't regular smicha, but actually was a much more direct. Moshe laid his hands on him, and actually the Medrash develops this extensively. Hashem, told Moshe with one hand, and Moshe did it b'ayin tova with two hands. So what we're talking about is, to use a rabbinic expression, a ba v'koach, right, that Yoshua really is a reflection of Moshe's aura and his charisma much more than any normal transition in later generations would be, where it's a matter of, again, there's a lot of mentoring that goes on, a lot of transfer of knowledge, but the relationship between Moshe and Yoshua was singular, and the smicha, really reflected that, a smicha beyond. Yeah, what's your name?
David,
great to meet you, and please, go ahead.
So I guess going back to source 9,
yes. Yeah, and you don't know how right you are when you talk about passing on God's Shkina, because the Gemara distinguishes between, this is even clearer in Parashas Baloska than it is in Yisro, but it's Esfali, Shivim Ish, Mizikne Yisrael, Venasatam Yod Chalav. The Gemara in Sanhedrin speaks a lot about what was unique about that the aura of Moshe's connection with the Shkina was, spilling over into the Shivim Zakenim, and the Ramban has a lot to say. So look in the Ramban in Baloska about what that really meant at the time. Though, to be fair, just what the Mishnah Pirkei Avos is talking about is, after Moshe's lifetime, so Yoshua became the figure who was, let's say, responsible for the Masora, right? Masara the Yeshua. And then Yeshua didn't turn things over to one person, but he turned things over to this amalgam, this group. So that's the distinction that I'm going for, your point being very well taken. In any event, as referenced before, right, Yoshua has this very deep attachment to Moshe. The smicha is reflective of that. And that expresses itself in, like, Yehoshua's very singular attachment to Torah. Mishar so Yoshua bin Anar lo yamish mitochael. The Gemara Menachos on Tzadi Tes quotes a pasuk which is, you know, really quite famous, maybe one of the most significant psukim for halachic purposes in all of Nach, where we're told that our relationship with Torah is defined by the terms of Vagisa bo yomam v'layla. Lo yomash sefer Torah zami picha, Vagisa bo yomam v'layla. So, according to many views within the Gemara, that actually defines what the halachic obligation of Torah study is. But there is a view in the Gemara Menachos that this pasuk is not a chiyuv, it's not a prescriptive pasuk, but it's actually, in some senses, descriptive and reflective of Yoshua's deep bond with Torah. That God was, in a sense, making Yoshua a promise that, yes, you're going to be very busy. You're going to be the prime minister and the president all rolled into one, and you're going to have a lot of, tzarchei tzibur. But don't worry, you'll continue to be involved very deeply in Torah. This was reassuring to Yoshua, because Hashem knew that divrei Torah were chavivin alav biyoser. And so when we think about the legacy of Yoshua, this is, I think, the second major piece. We already talked about his leadership style. I think the second major piece is to realize that Yoshua, is really a great figure in terms of being, for us, a kind of a paragon of what it means to be involved with Torah. That Yoshua is somebody who Chazal saw as Chavivin Alav Divresora Biyoser, that Yoshua, no matter what his engagements were, and they were many, and they were, very significant, that Yoshua was extremely devoted to the study of Torah, his entire life. And I think that really is an inimitable part of his legacy. And I want to take that idea one step further by appealing to a certain intuitive understanding that Yoshua really had of the nature of Torah study. And I don't think that this is severable from the fact that he learned Torah so intensively. So I think we're all largely familiar with the concept called Lo Bashamayim, as it appears in the Gemara Bava Metzia. Just very quickly to make sure we're all on the same page, the Gemara Bava Metzia talks about a very famous dispute between Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus and his contemporaries about the status of a particular Kli Cheres, an earthenware vessel. So the Torah says that a Kli Cheres can only be purified by breaking it. But let's say it comes from IKEA, and disassembling it is like, it's not exactly breaking it, but it is taking it apart. So Rabbi Elazar says that qualifies. That's considered netitza. That's considered breaking apart. This is called the Tanur Shel Achnai, the Tanur Shel IKEA. So the other people are like, that's not breaking it. Breaking it means like breaking it. It's like one of my kids like actually break something. They don't take it apart. They really break it. The Mahadran. So that's not breaking something. So Rabbi Elazar is like not yielding here. And, first he calls in, the river to start flowing backwards and all the base medrash starts collapsing. And then eventually he calls God in, to resolve the issue, very famously. And God says to everybody, look, I don't like to get involved in communal disputes, but what am I going to do? Rabbi Elazar is right, because halacha kamoso b'chol makom. And so then, very famously, Amad Rabbi Yeshua al-Raglav, so no relation to Yeshua ben Nun, but Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya, who is Rabbi Elazar's chaver, a very interesting relationship that they had throughout their lives. So he famously gets up and he says, Lo bashamayim hi, that God is not part of this discussion because, God gave the Torah to the Jewish people, and now he has to stay out of these things. And, very famously in the Gemara, they later met Eliyahu Anavi and said that God was chuckling, Nitzchuni Banai, that he was kicked out of this machlokes. So anyway, it was kind of tragic in the end because Rabbi Elazar wasn't so, quick to yield on the point and tragically kind of died an isolated figure. But that's the point of Lo Bashamayim. We often like to quote this. So the Lo Bashamayim, and it's true, is a privilege, right? It means that we decide the halach. When I say we, I mean the Chachmei Hador on the principle of Acher Rav Mahatos. There is a sister Gemara, if you will, to that is much less famous, but equally important, the other side of the coin, of lo ba'ashamayim hi, not as a privilege or as a right, but as a responsibility. And that relates to Yoshua ben Nun. So the Gemara in Tzemur on Tesayim tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, there was like this massive regression in communal Torah learning, that either 300 or 3,000 halachos were forgotten, bimei evlo shel Moshe. The grief was so intense, and you know, this happens all the time. There's a famous Gemara in Brachos that when Rav died, his Talmidim were coming back, and they couldn't figure out how to bench properly, and whether it's the grief or it's the sense of, you know, trepidation, you lose your confidence. It's a paradigmatic phenomenon. So anyway, the people come to Yoshua and they say, like, you have to pray now. What do they call this? This is the TTC, the Torah and Tefillah Center. Right. So, okay, so you have to do Tefillah to get back the Torah. And Yoshua says it doesn't really work that way. And he says, lo ba'ashamayim hi, that it's our responsibility. And if we lost it, we can't just go crying to God and say, give the Torah back to us, right? If lo ba'ashamayim means that we have the right to paskin, and we do, right? That means that we also have the responsibility to preserve the Torah. And so Yehoshua isn't telling the people necessarily what they want to hear, but he's telling them a hard truth, which is always a sign of good leadership. And he's saying, like, look, this is on me and it's on us. And what's really interesting is the Gemara says that Yehoshua's entire lifetime, they never quite made it back to that watermark. It actually took a little bit longer until a figure called Otniel ben Knaz, who was like the first of the Shoftim, so he was Loched as Kiryas Sefer, Ad Shehigi Otniel ben Knaz, V'Yatzir Mitoch Kopulo. So my argument here is that it wasn't that just Yoshua learned a lot of Torah, but Yehoshua actually understood something very deep about Torah. You know, you could spend a lot of time doing something and not fully grasp it, but what Yoshua really understood about Torah was that it's an enormous responsibility. And so if the second major aspect that I'm arguing for in terms of Yeshua's legacy for us, first one again being Yachol Leilech Neged Rucho Shoklachas V'achas, is his attachment to Torah. It wasn't just an attachment of Chavivos, which is itself very impressive, but an attachment of Lo Ba'ashamayim Hi, of taking responsibility for Torah. And sometimes that really means acknowledging a painful reality that if we lost Torah, bimei evlo shel Moshe, then we're going to have to work really hard to try to recover it. It's not going to be an instantaneous process. And I think that's, you know, to Yehoshua's enormous credit. There's a Medrash Rabbah that is particularly, I'm very fond of it. It's actually quoted by the Netziv in his Hakdamah to Sefer Dvarim, appropriately, that Hashem came to speak to Yehoshua, and Yehoshua was studying Mishnah Torah. Which, of course, is the Sefer of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Sefer Dvarim. It's Moshe's valedictory address. I always thought this Medrash Rabbah captures sort of like both of these aspects. That, of course, Yoshua's attachment. So when Hashem appeared to speak to Yoshua, what was he doing? He wasn't playing tennis or pickleball, but he was learning. You know, what was he learning? He was learning Torah's Moshe Rabbo, that he was immersed in Sefer Dvarim. You know, he wanted very much you know, to have that continuity. Another aspect, I think the third major aspect of Yeshua's legacy, and this is, I think, in some sense predictable, was Yeshua's indelible imprint on Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara in Bava Kamma tells us that Yeshua instituted what we refer to as the Asara Tanoim, that there are certain conditions of living in Israel that relate to everything from how neighbors relate to each other, how we use water sources or communal water sources, when we're allowed, let's say, to have rites of passage and egress through other people's fields, how we relate to what we call the Tzidei Rishas HaRabim, sort of like the public domain, but it's closer to people's property. So Yeshua didn't only conquer Israel, and he didn't only like sort of put each tribe where they needed to go, which was very important, and I said that was a prerequisite, a sine qua non, for having the Kedusha Rishona, the sanctity of the land of Israel. But Yehoshua ben Nun actually created, you know, very practical laws governing how people could actually live in Israel. Maybe I'll just, you know, read one or two of them from the Rambam in Nizkei Mamon, just to give people a sense of, you know, what Yehoshua was involved in. You know, you might think that this is like going to be left for, I don't know, like, you know, Moetzet, whatever they call it, so Binyamin, or like, you know, this is pretty granular stuff, you know, that could be left to municipal authorities, you know, how they're going to figure out, you know, what to do these things. But Yehoshua didn't mind rolling up his sleeves and like getting involved, you know, in these things. So let me just, you know, give you an example. So this is on the third line. This is Tznai number 2 of the 10. B'chein hisne she'akol adam mutar b'laked etzim yistei chavero. So he made this condition that people would be able to, you know, firewood, it's essential. You should be able to collect it from other people's fields and they from your field. V'hu she'yu etzim chusim akrovim li'os kotzim kigon hismi v'higi. But he got really deep, tarte mashma, into the weeds over here, that it wasn't just any wood that you could collect, right? It had to be certain kinds of wood and not other kinds of wood, and anyway, it was going to go bad, and so, you know, it better be used now. So you get the impression of somebody who was, like, extremely involved, you know, in making sure that there would be good neighborly relations, you know, in Israel, and that everybody would, you know, be able to avoid machloksin about this guy taking my firewood or he's taking, you know, my water sources. But he really wanted to set the Jewish people up, you know, for success. And everybody knows, I don't think there's anybody alive that, you know, will volunteer, maybe I'm wrong, you know, to have these conversations. Like, you know, people say, like, I'm so excited to sit on the variance board over here and to decide, you know, who gets to use whose firewood and who gets, you know, irrigation rights on Monday. But it really does have to be done if you think about it. If you don't do it, so then you're going to have it here, an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure, right? Because people are already going to be at each other's throats. And so he was like, this is not 911, this is 311 stuff. But it's very, right, it's necessary. In a second aspect, and I think this is really like a signature halacha. It's based on the Gemara Brachos. I just gave you the Rambam for just pragmatic purposes. So we know that Birchas Hamazon is a mitzvah d'oraisa, but it's one of these mitzvahs d'oraisa that uniquely, you know, the concept of Birchas Hamazon is a din d'oraisa, but the constituent parts were developed rabbinically over time. So we have a tradition, this is the 17th source, Seder Birchas Hamazon Kachi, Rishona Birchas Hazan, Shnia Birchas Aretz, Shlishas Boni Yerushalayim, Revias Hatova Meitim. So bracha rishona Moshe Rabbeinu tikna. So Moshe Rabbeinu gave us the first bracha of Hazana Sakol. Shnia, right, al ha'aretz v'al ha'mazon tikein Yehoshua. So I love this very much, right, that Yehoshua gave us the aspect of Birchas Hamazon that relates not to God in universal terms, which is what the first bracha is about, Hazana sa'ulam kulo b'tuvo, but specifically, right, the idea of God sustaining the Jewish people through Eretz Yisrael. Right, al ha'aretz ve'al ha'mazon, and it was Yehoshua ben Nun, and that's not an accident. So this both captures, right, the idea of Yehoshua's continuity from Moshe Rabbeinu, that he, you know, was able to take Birkas Hamazon one step further, but it also, I think, very deeply highlights his connection to Eretz Yisrael. Then one final point here. So it's the Asarat Tanaim, it's Birkas Hamazon, but a third piece of this, you know, part of the shir is the idea I mentioned before. That the initial Kedush of Eretz Yisrael was reversed. You know, what was achieved by military conquest was reversed by the conquest of the Babylonians. Then there was what we call a Kedusha Shnia, a second investiture of Kedusha that was led by Ezra and other figures, but Ezra most prominently, which is what we call Al Yedei Chazaka. It wasn't achieved by military conquest. Ezra didn't come with an army. And that which is achieved by military conquest is reversed by military conquest. That's achieved by, the Rav used to like to say about Chazaka, was this idea that it reflected like the, you know, unbreakable bond between the Jewish people and the land of Israel. So that actually lasted longer. That being said, I think that there is a piece of this discussion that we shouldn't overlook, that not all aspects of the Kedusha Rishona, which Yehoshua was primarily responsible for, were reversed. There is one aspect of the Kedusha Rishona that actually was eternal? Anybody happen to know? What part of the Kedusha Rishona was inviolate? Yeah.
So the Kedusha of the Beit
HaMikdash. Right, and according to the Rambam, Kedusha as Yerushalayim is a reflection of Kedusha as HaMikdash. So that Yehoshua didn't do on his own.
The Rambam or the Ravid?
What's that?
The Ravid said that it was Yerushalayim?
No, the Rambam. The Rambam in general is of the view, good question. The Rambam in general is of the view that Yerushalayim has the status of Kedusha HaMikdash. Like anytime we find the Mishnayos, we have the term Gevulin, right? So Gevulin means for the Rambam outside of Yerushalayim. There's some good evidence for it too. So what we see here, and this is not Yehoshua on his own, I should note, Shlomo had a part in this also. But the point is that you could argue that, you know, the Kedusha Rishona, with respect to the most significant aspect of the Kedusha, Kedushas Yerushalayim, which is Kedushas HaShechina, which the Rambam inimitable words, right? Kedusha sashchina ina betela liolam. Nobody can desecrate that kedusha, right? That can never be taken. So that was to Yoshua's real credit. So you see in all these different ways, whether it's Birchas Hamazon, whether it's an aspect of Kedusha Asiyah Yerushalayim, admittedly not the whole thing, and certainly the Tnaim, right, the nitty-gritty, is that an indelible part of Yoshua Ben Nun's legacy was, you know, his connection to, you know, Eretz Yisrael as well. So we've seen three things so far. Which is number one, his leadership. I think he creates a kind of a paradigm. Some people, some rabbinic leaders, continue to be Moshe Rabbeinu's. They're Yikov Hadin Zahar personalities. But Yoshua is always, I think, a personal role model in that way and a role model to many. Secondly, we talked about Yoshua's chavivus haTorah, and in particular his responsibility for Torah, the lobah shemayimi, not just as a right, but as a responsibility. And thirdly, the third feature of his halachic persona was his indelible contribution to the land of Israel, both at the macro level of Kedusha, investing it with Kedusha, and the micro level, the asara tanaim as well. What I'd like to try to do this part, I'll do mostly outside in the interest of time. I know there's a shul meeting this morning, perhaps to decide, you know, who gets irrigation rights. But, you know, I don't want to, you know. I just wanted to deal with one issue, which is one of the things that I think is personally very moving about Yoshua when you study him is that there's clear development of his personality. So if we go back to what we said at the beginning, that Yoshua kind of had these two major responsibilities. One was, of course, the conquest and settling of the land of Israel, Kibush V'chiluk, and then the part that we noted in the name of the Dvar Avram, the Chazak V'matz Me'od, that he was meant to be a spiritual leader as well. So you can really see the, you know, foreshadowing of this dichotomy the first time that Yoshua appears in the Chumash. Anybody know the first time Yoshua appears in the Chumash? What's our first encounter with Yoshua ben Nun?
Amalek.
Right. So the battle against Amalek. So we don't know about him beforehand, but we meet Yoshua as a battlefield captain. Right? Vayomer Moshel Yoshua Bechar Lachan Anashim Vitzehi Lachem Amalek. So Moshe is standing up on the mountain and Yoshua is really fighting below. So you see, you know, Yoshua is going to be a good candidate for a military captain, for a leader in that regard, which was certainly part of the job description. But there's something a little bit more subtle in that section of the Torah as well, which is that you see Yoshua also as a recipient of Masorah, admittedly at a microcosmic level, right? Because we have this idea of Ksov Zos Zikaron Basefer Visim Be'ozne Yoshua, that Yoshua isn't just a battlefield captain, but he is the bearer of this heritage, right? That Moshe Rabbeinu is told to write down the story of the Jewish people's battle against Amalek. And by the way, the Gemara Megillah very famously says that's how Esther eventually became a canonical text. Esther had a little bit of tension with the Chachamim. Kiva'uni ledoros, kitvuni ledoros, and Abelezer and Rebushua, getting back to them, you know, they sort of had this issue out, but they said there was a hint in that pasuk, ksov zos yikaron basefer, that there was still room in that pasuk for the inclusion of Esther. So anyway, I think you see Yoshua's two aspects of his leadership already from the first time that we meet him, the military dimension and then also being the bearer of the Sefer, which I think basically encapsulates what he would do. Yes.
So just the first time something's written down in the Torah. It's the first time someone's told to write something.
Yeah, so that is true, right? The Sefer HaBris, which appears in Parshas Mishpatim at Har Sinai, is obviously later, so that's a very good observation. You know what's interesting is that the Rambam says in Hilchos Avodah Zarah Perek Aleph that not only did Avraham, you know, teach everybody about monotheism, but the Rambam, you know, imputes to Avraham being a Mechaber Sfarim, that he wrote books on theology and monotheism. So I'm still looking on Amazon for those books. I think that they're out of print, but... you know, so but that does not appear in the text of the Chumash. I have to concede that point. Okay, so anyway, with respect to these two ideas of Yehoshua being an excellent candidate as a military captain, and then, you know, at the same time being, you know, an Ish HaSefer, Ksov Zosi Karim B'Sefer, Fisim B'Aznei Yehoshua, what the Gemara would later say about David HaMelech, right? The Gemara says about David HaMelech, Safra V'Saifa, that, you know, he could have the Sefer in one hand, and the sword in the other. That's a big thing in the world of Yeshivot Hesder, in today's day and age. The Safra V'Saifa became a kind of, you know, a sisma, and for good reason. I just wanted to point out that the two times we see Yehoshua slip up in the Torah, it's in each of these areas. You really see how he developed as a person, which is, I think is also very reassuring for us. So the first time is in the wake of the Egel Hazav. So if you remember the scene, so Moshe's up on the mountain, and Yehoshua is sort of hanging out below, right? He pitched this tent there, and he's waiting for Moshe to come down. And there's this real ruckus in the distance, right? The Jewish people are, you know, having this debauchery around the Egel Hazav, Vayakum Lutzachet. So, you know, Moshe comes down the mountain, very famously, and Yehoshua says to him, Kol milchama b'machaneh. There must be a war, right? The general always, you know, here's a war going on. And Moshe remonstrates with him. He says to him, Lo kol anos givura, v'lo kol anos chalusha, kol anos anochi shameh. He says, you have to learn how to listen, right? Not everything is a war. This is not good. It's not a war. It's a different kind of a problem. Which I think is, you know, very often the case, and like there's an adage that they say, you know, generals are always looking for military solutions. Sometimes they tell the general, you know, we're not gonna go to war here. We need another solution. But you know, people who think about, you know, things in military terms, it's not surprising that when something comes up, you know, they're calling for airstrikes and the ground forces. You know, so Yehoshua needed to learn, and Moshe, you know, made this very clear that not everything was a kol milchama b'machaneh. The other time that we see Moshe remonstrate with Yehoshua is on the Safra side. This gets back to Baloscha, what you're referring to, when Eldad and Medad are misnabe b'machaneh, right? And these two people, we don't know much about them, but they don't go to the Ohel Moed. David, as you referenced before, right? So the 70 go to the Ohel Moed, then we have these two guys who are not there, they're in the machaneh, and they're going around, according to one view, saying that like Moshe's days are numbered and Yehoshua is going to take over. So according to that view in particular, it becomes very compelling. Yehoshua says, as we recall, Adoni Moshe, kila'im, that this is an outrage, and these people need to be incarcerated because, you know, they're saying horrible things. And Moshe says to Yehoshua, Hamikanei atali, you know, what are you, zealous for me? Umi yitain kolam Hashem nevi'im, kitain Hashem isrucho aleihem. What, you know, this is a bad thing, that, you know, there are other nevi'im out there? You know, so again, both of these were areas of natural strength for Yehoshua, both as a military captain and as like Moshe's super devoted Talmud. But you can overdo anything in life. And so Moshe had to tell Yehoshua, not everything is a kol milchama. There are other kinds of issues that you're going to have to learn to deal with. Not everything is a military issue, and that's part of Yehoshua's development. The second issue is, Moshe, you know, it's really great, Yehoshua, that you're very devoted to me. That's very much to your credit, and ultimately, that's really why Yehoshua is going to take over. But, you know, sometimes you could be, like, overly devoted to the point where you're not really recognizing here that the idea, you know, isn't to aggregate all of, you know, the spiritual grandeur into one place. But from Moshe's point of view, Mi yitain kolam Hashem nevi'im, ki yitain Hashem es rucho aleihem. And so I think that, you know, part of what we see here is Yehoshua developing. In both aspects, both in terms of his military leadership and becoming more sophisticated in that way, as well as in terms of being the Talmud par excellence of, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu, I think the paradigmatic Talmud and all of the Masorah. But to be a Talmud doesn't mean, you know, to, you know, try to, we all know these personalities, you know, who feel like their Rebbe is the only person in the world and only his opinion matters. And that's not a healthy thing either. And Moshe wasn't looking to cultivate that. He was looking to cultivate a really devoted Talmud who could appreciate the need for other people's spiritual development, especially if he was going to be their leader. And, you know, his job was to not push them down and incarcerate them, you know, for prophesying, but, so I think that you see most, you know, Yehoshua's development along both of these lines. And it's always good, you know, to note that people do develop in life. Great people do develop. And that's not a sign of weakness. That's really a sign of greatness to be able to grow in these two areas. One final observation, and then I'll just conclude with a note. You know, the first pasuk in Sefer Yehoshua always struck me. The second pasuk, excuse me. V'yachrei Moshe Moshe ben Hashem, v'yomer Hashem Yehoshua ben Nun Mishareis Moshe Lemor. Right, Yehoshua's self-conception is still as the Mishareis Moshe. Mishar so Yehoshua ben Nun Na'ar lo yomish v'toch ha'ol. So Hashem says to Yehoshua, Moshe avdi meis, v'ata kum avor es hayardein, etc., etc. She says, Moshe is dead, And now, you know, you have to cross the Yarden and take the people with you. You have to lead. So if there was anybody in Klal Yisrael who knew that Moshe was dead, it was Yehoshua, right? This is not informational. He's not saying Moshe Avdi Meis. Just in case you missed it, like, you know, Moshe is actually dead. Yehoshua noticed that. So what's Moshe Avdi Meis? It's a matir. It's he's saying, look, you know, you super devoted Talmud, Yehoshua, right? Moshe's time has ended, and we need you to be able to, you know, find a level that you didn't have before because you had the luxury of Moshe, you know, leading the Jewish people. So Moshe Avdi Meis, and that becomes a matir. I think a very necessary one for Yehoshua, and that I think is a reflection of, you know, his ultimate devotion, and then everything, as we know, follows from there. So, as I say here at the end, this is the last source, Sof Davar HaKol Nishma, when all is said and done, the Navi says something remarkable. The very end of Sefer Yehoshua, Vayavod Yisrael as Hashem, Kol Yimei Yehoshua, V'chol Yimei HaZakenim Asher Harichu Yamim Achari Yehoshua, V'asher Yadu Es Kol Maaseh Hashem Asher Asa Li Yisrael. That Yehoshua's success can be measured not merely in terms of the impact that he had in his lifetime, but maybe an even greater recommendation, V'chol Yimei HaZakenim Asher Harichu Yamim Acharei Yehoshua. That Yehoshua's contribution, you know, to Klal Yisrael was so great that not only did the Jewish people serve Hashem all of his lifetime, but the Jewish people served Hashem in all of the days of the Zakenim who came after Yehoshua, right? Moshe Kibbal Torah Misinai Misar Yehoshua, Yehoshua Zakenim, which means that Yehoshua's presence, his leadership, his greatness continued to be felt even after he was physically no longer on the scene. You know, they say in the world of management that the best leader is the one, you know, who's able to impact the company's culture long after they have physically departed, because they're able to create certain structures. I didn't work at McKinsey, so, you know, I don't know whether, you know, they still hold of this, and I read a book or two. But it strikes me that that's what the Navi is getting at, that Yehoshua, you know, in his greatness can be measured in that respect as well. So again, we tried to develop 3 points with Hayara. Number one, Yehoshua's legacy of Yachol Leilech Keneged Ruchol Shokol Achas V'Achas. Yehoshua is a person who really led from the standpoint of appreciating the range of people out there and meeting people where they were. Secondly, we saw that Yehoshua was a Talmud par excellence, Chavivos Devei Torah, but also responsibility for Torah, Lo Bashamayim Hei. Thirdly, we saw that Yehoshua left an indelible impact on Eretz Yisrael, on the mitzvah of Birkas HaMazon, Al Haaretz HaMazon, the Asarat Tznayim, aspects of Kedusha Rishona, the aspect that's not Betela, maybe the most important aspect. That was the third element. We noted that Yehoshua seems to be capable of growth and development, that he started out as an ish, you know, milchama, but had to be told, you know, it's kol anos anochi shomea, right? Lo kol anos gevura, lo kol anos chalushan. Not everything is a kol milchama, and you're going to have to deal with other issues and to develop in that way. And then also, in terms of being a Talmud, of knowing what the boundaries are in terms of, you know, slavish devotion, umi yitain kol am Hashem neviim. This is not a discredit, Chalila, it's the opposite. It's really a credit to somebody who could grow in areas that were already natural strengths, but to get even better. And so, you know, if there's a little bit, as we said, of a phenomenon, or maybe even more than a little bit, of Yehoshua being underappreciated, eino nisbad kehalacha, the Gemara in Shabbos, and derided by the Ziknei Hador as, you know, Pnei Levana as opposed to Moshe's Pnei Chama. Hopefully this morning was a very, 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 very modest attempt at trying to redress a bit of a historical injustice. Thank you very much.